Yes, welcome to the dark. And welcome to the Halloween Hodgepodge show. The whole reason this is called Halloween Hodgepodge is this Halloween season, since the calendar fell the way that it did, Halloween wasn't just a day, it was kind of an entire weekend. We had things leading up to Halloween. Halloween was before the real weekend, and a lot of haunted attractions or Halloween events continued all the way through the weekend. So I did a couple of small recordings in a bunch of different places, and I thought I'd kind of slap them together to let you know how I spent Halloween this year. We have a quick snippet that I recorded at the Tampa Theater, because on November 30th, I did some readings from both past and my brand new book of poetry and prose at two different shows there. And it was also, I also shared the stage with a group called the Storytellers of Old Tampa Bay. And at the second show in the evening, the adult-themed show, we also brought up the finalists for the Tampa Theater's Trick or Tweet competition, where people submitted tweet-length horror stories. And I did an interview with the winner, a guy by the name of Spooky Steve. And I have to say it that way every time, because it's S-P, capital O, small o, capital O, small o, Y, Steve. So, Spooky Steve. And I got a quick interview with him. He's also joined our Facebook group for A Scott in the Dark. So if you want to talk to Spooky Steve, you can do that via the Facebook group. I also recorded a short segment from Hallow Scream at Busch Gardens in Tampa, because I was there on Halloween night, and it was interesting. It's a different event. It was an awful lot of fun, and I will be honest, I did get through every haunted house, and I spent the majority of my time, however, talking to stage managers and members of the leadership team that I knew from there, and it's been 5 years since I've been back, and I figured I needed to go back. Well, it's been 5 years since I worked there. I've been back every year, but I figured I needed to go back and celebrate the 20th, and I was even able to take a photograph with the actor who is playing. They have, at the front of the park, they have all of the different icons throughout the year, and one of the actors was playing Dr. Livingsdoom, which was one of the first media icons or media spokespeople for the event, which was played by yours truly. So I had a chance to have a picture taken with my past and present self, I don't know, past and present character. And then on November 2nd, which was the closing night of Undead in the Water, also here in Tampa, a house on board, or a haunted attraction on board the American Victory ship, I did a recording after spending the majority of the evening there that was all syrupy and, you know, give hugs to your After Dark family and all that sort of stuff. So singing lots of praises. I recorded that then. This is actually being recorded on November 5th of 2019, so everything is passed, and I'm home, and I've kind of put the buttoned up all of the Halloween projects, and I'm moving on to the Christmas projects. Yes, I do Christmas projects. And so I decided, before I fully closed the book on Halloween 2019, I would record this show, share with you some of those recorded segments, and at the end, I may actually do a reading from my new book, to give you a sample of what was done at the Tampa Theater as part of their Nightmare on Franklin Street / Awake in the Dark storytelling evening. Yes, I know reading it is probably more for me than it is for you, but, you know, that way you can kind of hear what the new book is like, and if you choose to purchase it, you know, go to scottswenson.com/books, and it's got links there to not only the new one, but all of them as well, so you can grab them. Grab them while you can. But the reason I thought it was important, and I was getting kind of nostalgic this year, I guess, but the reason I thought it was important to do a Halloween Hodgepodge show was, over the years, the way I've celebrated Halloween has changed significantly. When I was really little, it was that sort of bring out the Collegeville clown costume, which was that probably ridiculously flammable acetate jumpsuit that you put on and tied behind your neck and then put that hard plastic mask over your face. And of course, I lived in the Midwest back then, so it was bundle up underneath the clown costume. So you kind of looked like a clown slash stuffed sausage with not only a flat two-dimensional hat on the mask, but also like a stocking cap behind it, underneath it, and a clown with mittens as you went around trick-or-treating from house to house. Now, that, of course, was back when I was still trick-or-treating with one or both of my parents, and we would go, you know, we'd make maybe six or seven stops at the neighbors that we knew, and there was always something special, you know, for us because we knew each other. So, yes, they were still doing popcorn balls back then. So we could, you know, get like basically a bag of treats or a small toy or something like that from our neighbors. So we actually spent more time back in those days. We spent more time getting into costume than we did actually trick-or-treating, because Mom wanted to make sure that I was properly all bundled up. And then we put on the costume, and I used the same clown costume from the time I was like maybe four until the time I was maybe six. And it's funny because I think it actually got shorter and shorter because I got taller and taller. I also got fatter and fatter, so I kind of filled out that costume a little bit as we went along. Then the next sort of phase, I think, in Halloween and the celebration of Halloween was when I was in junior high and early high school. Yes, I did trick-or-treat into high school, but it was primarily junior high. And back then, you couldn't start trick-or-treating before 4 o'clock, and you had to be in by 10. So my friends and I knew that we had basically 6 hours to get in as much time as we could. And, you know, I know that a lot of kids, especially into the high school years, were far more interested in TPing houses and throwing eggs and that sort of stuff. But no, I was all about the candy. Like I said, I was a fat kid. So I would make sure that a group of friends and I would figure out, okay, here's how we're going to do this part of the neighborhood, then that part of the neighborhood. And we'd always talk to people as we were walking by to find out where the really cool houses were. It's interesting because my costumes, you know, now that I do a lot of terrifying, gross stuff, my costumes when I was in grade school and junior high really weren't that terrifying. In fact, they were always homemade, and they were always made based on something that I pretended to be. For example, when I was a kid, I had a stuffed monkey that I really liked, and his name was Ace, because we won him at a game in Atlantic City. But anyway, AC, Atlantic City, Ace, I don't know. Anyway, I wanted to do a Halloween costume that I could take Ace with me. So there was one year, probably in maybe fourth grade, where I went as an organ grinder. Boy, I was a weird kid. I don't know who, as a third or fourth grader, would want to go trick-or-treating as an organ grinder. But I did, and I had, you know, the big Italian stereotypical mustache, which was probably very culturally insensitive at the time. And I looked sort of like a gondolier with a little short vest. But I also took a music box and put it inside a larger box on a stick. So I actually had that sort of hurdy-gurdy style organ grinder thing. And inside that cardboard box was a bag, which I put all my candy in, and Ace was proudly stuck on my shoulder. So there was the year that I was the organ grinder. There was another year that we'd gotten some sort of appliances and gotten a couple of big boxes. So I put together, working with my dad, we put together a cardboard box robot that was a combination of these boxes plus parts from an erector set. And the robot costume actually opened in the front. It had a little trap door that would open, that you could put candy in, and then I would close the trap door and then turn the erector set from the inside so that the gears would move. The downside with that costume is, you know, like I said, I was always all about the candy. So when I was going out with my friends, the downside for that costume was it lacked mobility. Here I was, this big, awkward sort of phone booth of a thing, and my friends are wearing, you know, hobo costumes, torn jeans, and a beat-up hat, and dad's old suit coat, and some black on their face. And so they could move a lot quicker than I could. As I got older, I learned that lesson and went for much simpler things. I was almost embarrassed because I got to a certain age where I still wanted to trick or treat. So I tried to avoid makeup and went to masks so nobody knew who the heck I was. And I tried to, you know, blend in as much as I could. So I shifted away from the cool, you know, Halloween themed bags to just a pillowcase, just like everyone else. But I do remember back in probably when I was in sixth grade, something that they probably wouldn't do now. In our neighborhood, there was a guy who was a professional magician for parties and such. And on Halloween, he would set up an actual show in his living room. So all the kids were invited in, and you build up an audience of maybe 15 to 20 kids, and he would do a short 10-minute magic show. And then as we left, we all got candy bars, and it was both tricks and treats at that house. And now I think about that, and I'm thinking, no, I'm pretty sure parents would think that they were abducting children or indoctrinating them into some cult when they went into the houses. I don't even know whether kids trick-or-treat anymore. That was really the whole thing. You know, once we got into college, of course, it was all about parties. It was all about Halloween parties. And my freshman year of college, I was downtown Chicago. I was at DePaul University. And I had two Halloween parties back-to-back, but I didn't want to wear the same costume to each. And I wanted to make sure that they were very different so people wouldn't recognize me from year to year. And so the first party I went to as a bag lady wearing a bad leopard coat and the sort of dirty sweatpants. And I had a wig and a hat. A leopard hat, by the way, that matched the dingy old leopard coat. And then I filled my purse. Yes, I was carrying a purse. I went all out. But I filled my purse with dried leaves. Now, like I said, I was in Chicago, so there were a lot of dried leaves in October. And I filled my purse with them, and I stayed in character the whole night. And I went around talking to everybody and saying, oh, it's so good to see you. You know, living on the street, we don't have a whole lot of amenities like we have here at this party. But I brought you something. I thought that I should always be a good guest and bring people things. So I brought you this. And I would pass out leaves, dried leaves, to everyone at the party. They also thought I was crazy. And actually, in telling this story, I think they may have been right. But then the next night, I wanted to do something completely different. So I wore black pants, a long black trench coat, one of those plastic sort of translucent, always smiling face masks, sort of like became popular many years later in The Purge and a lot of horror films. And I carried a giant butcher knife through the party, and I would just come up and stand behind people silently. You know, it's always been hard for me to go to Halloween parties because I want to play the characters so full out that I don't really have a whole lot of fun time to chat and drink. Because the bag lady could drink, that was fine. But I never changed the voice. She always talked like this. And I found myself going to parties even at haunt conventions now in full, you know, silicone mask and I would just stay in character, not talk to anybody. One party, I did that for the first half, went back up to my hotel room, changed out of costume, put on, you know, some festive Halloween shirt, and went back to the party and asked anybody if they had seen the tall, crazy guy who was wearing the silicone zombie mask, which was me. Yeah, I don't know. My brain just doesn't work the same way most people's brains work, I guess. But now, you know, since I'm working in the industry and had multiple events, I've had the opportunity to have not just one Halloween, but an entire Halloween weekend. And the first part of it was, like I mentioned earlier, at the Tampa Theater. And it was two evening shows, one earlier in the evening and then one later, that were storytelling. And it was really fun to host a storytelling show. Because let's be honest, you know, well, we all know my affinity for telling stories, and we all know how important they are to me. And working with a storytelling group, the Storytellers of Old Tampa Bay, it was a bunch of different people's approach to telling ghost stories or scary stories. And the first one was, both of them took place on the stage at the Tampa Theater here in Tampa. And the first one was standing around a sitting around a campfire. And then we would stand up and tell a story and sit down, and I would introduce the next one. It was really interesting and unique, and a lot of families came to enjoy the power of the spoken word in relationship to Halloween. Then the late night show took place in a library. Now, of course, when you're performing in a movie theater, you can project all kinds of cool things behind you. So Jill Witecki, who is their marketing director, was put together this incredible sort of PowerPoint of a library where eyes just randomly started appearing. And the same thing happened in the campfire scene with the woods. You know, it slowly transformed and chased through the entire show. But the second show, the adult show, we did not only the storytellers, but also the top 11 finalists in their trick-or-tweet competition. And these were tweet-length horror stories. And after it was all over, I had a chance to sit down with the winner, and we all remember his name, right? Spooky Steve. So we all had an opportunity, Spooky Steve and I had a chance to sit down and chat, and here is that recording. So we are actually sitting in the Tampa Theater right now, and we've just finished what I'm going to very selfishly and arrogantly refer to as a wonderful evening of two different storytelling shows in celebration of Awake in the Dark, the new book, and got to work with the Storytellers of Old Tampa Bay. And one of the coolest things that the Tampa Theater did for part of this event, part of their Nightmare on Franklin Street series, was to do a trick or tweet competition, which basically means that you had to tell a scary story in a tweet-length format. And I am lucky enough to sit here after all of the craziness is done. I get to sit here with Spooky Steve.
Spooky.
Four O's.
Pronounced like a whaling ghost is saying.
Like a whaling ghost? Like the ghost of someone who used to kill Steve. Whales? Is that...
That's possible, but just really the tone of voice. So.
Oh, okay.
Spooky Steve. Spooky. Capital O, lowercase O, capital O, lowercase O.
Now,
very important.
Can I just call you Steve, or do I have to constantly say Spooky?
You have to say Spooky Steve, Steve every single time you refer to me.
Okay.
I'm just kidding.
So, dude. So, Spooky Steve. You were the winner of the trick-or-tweet competition. And I have to say, there were a bunch of applicants, and there were 11 finalists, and the audience, through their cheers and screams, actually selected you as the winner.
Yes.
It was interesting, though, because you actually had the shortest of all of the entries.
I did. I was surprised that some of them were longer. Well, all of them were longer.
That makes yours the shortest, yeah. Yes. It's funny how that works. But so what... Just because everybody, of course, now wants to know, well, what did he do? How can you do a scary story in such a short period of time? Would you be willing to share with all of our listeners?
Sure. Breakups are hard, but not as hard as getting her brains and skull fragments out of the carpet.
And now you see why it won. You know, part of the reason that I really liked that one in particular, and again, I had no say in who won. I was just listening to the screaming crowd. Part of the reason I like that is because it left so much to the imagination. You know, we filled in all the details, and we didn't have to... It was all very clear, it was all very succinct, but it wasn't drawn out, you know? You didn't gild the lily in any way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in addition to writing very short, scary stories, You also have a podcast, don't you?
Yes, I just started it. In fact, it's like just been submitted right now. So it's like in the process of getting approved for Apple and Spotify and everything.
Very cool. And it is
It's called Spooky Steve. It's not even the Spooky Steve show or anything. It's just Spooky Steve.
So what kind of stuff do you talk about on your podcast?
It's actually a storytelling podcast. So it's just each episode is a new story.
Excellent. Well, you guys know how important stories are to me and, you know, not to mention the name of a book, follow the story. But you know how important stories are for me when it comes to haunted attractions. And so I think that if you guys who are listening can search out Spooky Steve and get some new stories behind your imagination, kind of get in there with those chops for a beginning, middle, and end kind of thing. So you are a other than a fellow podcaster, you are a writer. What else do you do in your grown up world?
Yeah, I do a little bit of everything. I mean, like you, I do visual art. I do lately it's been a lot of writing, but I do music as well.
Excellent. So I think it's really cool that you decided to come and be part of this Tampa Theater event. How did you find out about it? What was it like? Did somebody call you and say, "Hey, Spooky Steve, see, I did it for you. You've got to enter this." Or did you just stumble across it? Or
I found it on Facebook, a sponsored Facebook ad, the day before the deadline.
And
I was like, this is completely up my alley. I have to enter this. Great. I have to go to this. This is totally what I'm all about.
And what's super cool is winning it, you walk away with a pretty substantial prize.
Yes, you know,
500 bucks.
Yes.
Yes. And that, you know, so sometimes it's worth it to tell scary stories, kids. Just saying. I'm just saying. So, you know, be prepped for that. So once your podcast is all put together, where can the listeners of A Scott in the Dark come to find you? Are you going to be all over Spotify and?
Yeah, it'll be on Apple Podcasts and then Spotify. And then I'm working on getting it on Google as well.
Excellent. Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for being a part of this and for sharing your twisted and warped little mind with not only the audience here at the Tampa Theater, but also all of the listeners here at A Scott in the Dark.
Well, thank you so much. It was a great event. I really enjoyed every bit of it.
Thank you. So on Halloween night, I actually attended Howl-O-Scream at Busch Gardens in Tampa. Now, for those of you who are not aware, that was an event that I was heavily involved with for its first 15 years and have not been involved with at all for the last five. This was its 20th anniversary, and it was really fun to go back and see how the event has changed, to see who was still there, who was new. And so here is a short recording recorded on Halloween night on October 31st of this year, 2019. And kind of sharing my thoughts in the moment. Now, to be honest, I haven't listened to it since I recorded it, so let's see what I said. So, as part of my Halloween hodgepodge, I'm going to record this little segment on Halloween night. This is actually recorded Halloween night 2019, and I am back at my old stomping grounds. I'm at Howl-O-Scream at Busch Gardens in Tampa. I've pretty much gone through the whole event, and it's interesting because after being here for the first 15 years of the event and seeing things come and go, it's a very different event, but it's still an awful lot of fun. It is just so cool to walk around and see, you know, some of the things that we started and some of the new things that we never even thought of, and the technology that has expanded and continued to make this event grow. And I do hope that it continues to grow and it continues to have the support not only of the guests who come and spend a ton of money to, you know, enjoy themselves and get cool t-shirts and food and photos, but I also hope that it continues to be supported by the park itself, because without park support, of course, stuff like this never happens, or certainly never continues. In walking around, it looks as though they're very healthy. Obviously, Halloween night is always the lightest attended night of pretty much any haunted attraction, because people have, at least in my experience, people have free parties to go to, and they take their kids out trunk or treating or whatever the youngsters do these days. But I will say, probably the most exciting thing for me is getting to see so many of the wonderful, wonderful people that I have worked with over the years. The stage managers, the some of the actors who are still here. And just for those of you who don't know, I was part of the team that created Howl-O-Scream in Tampa when it first started, and I was part of the team for the first 15 years. So I've been gone for 5 years now, and I've been back every year, but this is the first time I've ever really talked a whole lot about it, actually from the event. And it's interesting because, you know, being its 20th anniversary this year, they're doing a lot of callbacks to so many of the elements and the houses and the icons that we used in years past. And that's been sort of nostalgic, which is kind of cool. But like I said, the coolest thing is the After Dark family, you know, the people that I worked with here for years and years and years. And it's great to see them trying new things and hiring new people. For those of you who've never been to Howl-O-Scream in Tampa, it is a full theme park, plus this year there were 6 houses, 9 scare zones, and a show. And so it's a pretty big event, and it's loaded with startles, which is a lot of fun. It is not a family-friendly event. It is quite dark in some of their content, which, of course, you know me, I'm all about that. One of their new houses is called The Residence, which is a house that I just happen to know a little insight on, that was put together by Andrew Curran and his team at Practical Imagination, and it is really cool. It's nice to see a house that has gotten back to some really interesting storytelling. There's a plot line, there's variety, and you know, and I've known Andrew for a long, long time, and it's good to see that sort of return to good, really good storytelling. So that was a highlight for me tonight. Another highlight for me was a house that I saw when it first opened, which I believe was either last year or the year before. I can't remember any of the years on houses. So, but that was a house called Simon Slaughterhouse. And when it first opened, I didn't care for it because it seemed very homogenized, a very typical sort of slaughterhouse design. But this year it was intense. And I don't know whether it was the cast or whether I talked to one of the stage managers and they said they had made some subtle changes to the house itself. But it was on fire when I went through, and it seemed like a good, long, intense, winding experience. So those were the two highlights for me this year. It was it's just a great night, and I got to hang out with friends and see a whole bunch of people that I hadn't seen in a long time. And so thanks to my friends at Busch Gardens for a great Howl-O-Scream Halloween. And so this is just another part of the hodgepodge that is the Halloween show here on A Scott in the Dark. So from Howl-O-Scream at Busch Gardens Tampa, let's move on to our next part of this creepy and gory patchwork quilt that is the Halloween Hodgepodge show. Now, since Halloween was on a Thursday this year, most or many Halloween attractions or haunted attractions did Friday and Saturday as well. And Undead in the Water at the American Victory Ship was no different. We actually did both nights, and I stopped by both nights just to kind of say goodbye to the cast. And this next piece I recorded near the end of the last night as I was walking in front of the event. And I will say that this year, you know, haunting an actual 1940s cargo ship is just the coolest thing in the world. And we've already started thinking of plans for things we can do next year, and hopefully we'll be able to come up with something cool. But here are my thoughts. And as I recall, this got a little syrupy. So, me telling everybody how much I love them. And I wasn't even drinking at the time. So anyway, here is a recording from the last night of Undead in the Water at the American Victory Ship in Tampa. So the next part of the Halloween hodgepodge is tonight at, it's the last night actually, it's November 2nd, and it's the last night at Undead in the Water at the American Victory Ship. And I have been sort of hopping around this whole weekend, and those of you who are hunters, you know, you're probably ending on the end of November, or the end of November 2nd as well. Most people went through the Saturdays, some people didn't, I guess. But I just want to say that working with Undead in the Water at American Victory Ship has been so much fun, because it's an incredible staff here on the ship who is very dedicated to raising money and keeping the ship running. It's also been an incredible cast. These people here who have dedicated the 11 nights of the event, dedicated themselves to scaring the crap out of people. And we all know, you know, we all know what haunters go through, and we all know the ups and downs that happen during the course of a run. But I will say, since I was here opening night and then didn't come back until the night before closing, and then tonight, which is closing night, this cast did something that impressed the heck out of me, and that is they maintained their intensity throughout the entire run. And in fact, I think they were even more intense at the end than they were at the beginning. Part of that is their dedication to this incredible event, and the other part that deserves a lot of credit is their stage manager. And yes, I'm going to call her out by name, Katie Barker, one of my favorite stage managers to work with. Keeps these people moving and hopping. And then Andrew Curran and Rodney Waldrop, and they just kept all the tech stuff going. The folks who are part of the regular day crew here on the ship have just, it's just an incredible experience, and I just want to give kudos to all of them. And I hope all of you who have been doing haunts all season long take just a moment to really think back to all the people that made your haunt experience a positive one. Think back to, you know, the training, the costuming, the makeup people, the scenic people, and of course, the phrase that I use all the time, the After Dark family, which is your cast. And if you're like me, or like most haunters, you're thinking at the end of your last night, oh, wow, we're done. And then next Thursday or Friday, you'll wake up and go, oh, we're done. So it's that incredible mixed feelings. And of course, for those of you who have to take everything down, you have that additional week, month, whatever it is, if you have to take everything down. Those of you who have, you know, standing haunts that can stay up all year, you don't have to worry about all that. But if you're one of those people that has to strike stuff, you know, you've got a little bit of extra time to sort of process the end. But I just want to make sure that everyone listening, all of you who are haunters or who have ever worked in a haunted attraction, take just a moment to think back and in your mind, if not out loud, thank all of the people that made your haunt work this year, including people like your security teams, including people like your operations folks who kept your queue lines running, including the people who, you know, brought in the extra donuts, because let's face it, there's always one cast member who brings in donuts. It happens, I think, every haunt. Because without these people, this experience would not happen. There wouldn't be guests screaming and running out with tears in their eyes. So this is the next part of my little Halloween hodgepodge, and that is closing night at Undead in the Water at the American Victory Ship in Tampa, Florida. And kudos to all of the cast, crew, and staff. And again, give your own group a big hug, all right? And now, as promised, and sort of like a little Halloween present to my listeners, or to me, just because I like to read these out loud, and hopefully you'll enjoy it too. But As I mentioned earlier, I had a brand new book come out on Edgar Allan Poe's birthday this year. So it's only been out for about a month. I've done a couple of different book signings and sold quite a few copies, so hopefully people are enjoying it. But the new book of dark poetry and prose is called Awake in the Dark, and it is my fourth book, the two that I did for The Vault of Souls, as well as my first book called Dreaming in Shades of Fear. But Awake in the Dark is, I think, one of my favorite. It's the newest, so it's clearly my favorite book. But it is, it's got several short stories in it, and a couple of poems, and it's very dark, it's very adult, and it's very creepy. The readings that I did at the Tampa Theater were very well received, and this piece is actually the way we ended the show. It's also the last piece in the book. And the cool thing about this particular book is not only did I write it, I also was able to illustrate it. So I did the cover art and five illustrations inside the book as well. They were all done as acrylic paintings. The cover was done in color, and all of the internal stuff was just done in black, whites, and grays. But it was really a labor of love and took several years to write. I was writing it all through the time I was doing the Vault of Souls stuff. It was supposed to be the second book, but it ended up being the fourth. So it encompasses a very wide range of styles and where my mind was in a lot of different places. But this is, like I said, the last piece in the book. It was the last piece for the show at the Tampa Theater. And it's going to be the last piece in the Halloween Hodgepodge show here. Before I read it, I would like to remind folks to please come out and say hi if you're going to be at IAPA. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be doing two different presentations, one on edutainment called Learning to Have Fun, so how zoos and aquariums can use entertainment to help them teach and help engage guests. And I'm also doing a seminar on the past, present, and future trends of the haunt industry, specifically with theme parks. So I'm very excited for that. I think that'll be a lot of fun. I'll be there all week. It's in Orlando. I'll also be at the Brass Ring Awards. Scott Swenson Creative Development and TCB Productions are both co-sponsoring and presenting the Elaine M. College Best Performer Award, so we will be there as well. But if you are going to IAPA, which for those of you who don't know is the International Association of Amusement Parks and Attractions, please look me up, say hi. I would love to say hello. I will have a pocket full of the logo pins if anybody wants one. And then after that, after the holidays, I will be at HauntCon in New Orleans one more year. So come out and see me then. Join us on our Facebook group and keep listening to A Scott in the Dark. So now to close things out, here's a piece from Awake in the Dark called Is the End of the Day the End of Days? I'm sitting at my desk watching the street fires through the cracks in my boarded up window. It's quiet now, but I'm sure there's still someone out there left to scream. The last 7 days have been a first-hand introduction to hell. As I take the first sip of my last glass of wine, the low battery warning flashes on my laptop. Power was the first thing to go. Crippling, really. No one could fight back without lights or communication. If it weren't for the storm shutters and the hurricane supplies, I would have had to join the lambs to slaughter in the street for food. Instead, I just watched. I'm not sure which was worse. Suddenly, I hear three gunshots from next door. There's a pause, and then a fourth. I try to convince myself that they were fired in defense, but I know they weren't. No one wants to live through this. No one wants to watch their wife and two kids slowly die of sickness. With a sigh, I take another sip. The sound of desperate emptiness has taken over. It's not silence, It's quieter. It's stillness that reaches for miles. The world is dead. Not sleeping. Dead. Except for us few remaining parasites who are too stupid or stubborn to give in. All in good time, I suppose. For minutes, or hours, I sit silently. It's hard to tell. Time is not only difficult to measure, but unnecessary now. With a sudden and unexpected burst of decisiveness, I raise my glass and down the rest of my wine. It's like an involuntary toast to the last act. A final warning from my computer. The battery is drained. This is the way the world ends. Not with a bang, but...